Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Monday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brook. She invites you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts as we complete reading Samuel Hahnemann's Organon. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community, taking time out this Monday to begin with some inspiration, to talk about current events, and to read the words of Dr. Samuel Hahnemann in his Organon of Medicine as we read through each of the aphorisms. Today is March 21st, 2011. You're listening to show number 137. Thank you all for joining me. I do want to remind everyone that this is just a simple study session, and if you have healthcare needs, to see your healthcare practitioner. So we're going to begin today with some inspiration for the first day of spring. It is the most propitious day of the year. Happy birthday to Twitter. Woo! It's your fifth birthday, and really, I do feel as if Twitter has made a difference in the world. We are so connected. We are tweeting to each other and getting information to spread like wildfire. We are informing each other about the news, current events, at the very moment that it is happening. Twitter is more than telling another person that you're having a bowl of oatmeal for breakfast or some other mundane activity, although some people do enjoy talking about it. I also want to do a big, big shout out to happy birthday to my daughter, Sonia. And I love her very much, and they're wishing for many blessings this year. And let us also pray that things only get better in the world through all the turmoil that we are observing today for the younger generation. I want to let you know that last night, Sunday night, we had the midnight meditation, and you can always go back and download it or listen to it. As a matter of fact, today I was thinking it might just be fun for folks to listen every night to the Sunday night meditation and then each Sunday go to the next week's meditation. In fact, there was recently on the New York Times, it might have even been today, an article all about meditation, that transcendental meditation has really taken off big time, that it helps people with their personal lives, their marriage, their professional, their work lives. Taking time out in the day to meditate, to go within, can help in so many ways, and that's why I'm providing this meditation for the community. We know that it can help to reduce hypertension, obesity, diabetes, coronary heart disease, and this is a report from the Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles. It's not just air. It's just not waves. It is, they're figuring it out that this really is true, and that there are beneficial brain activity and brain function to the cognitive development, which is also reported in the American University. And there is a lot more that we need to learn about it, and there will always be skeptics to everything, no matter what. But we know if we practice something and it works for us, then continue to use it. It's for your healing and your joy in your life. Today's quotes are coming about because of the supermoon, people are calling it, the full moon, when the moon was in very close proximity to the earth. This is a quote by Sandy Miller. You have to be able to appreciate things. How many people can say it was a full moon last night and appreciate it? So how many people went out there and actually took a look at the moon? It really was spectacular. Confucius. I love him. He has so much wisdom. And here's a quote from him about the moon that kind of has a lot of double entendres in there. The faults of a superior person are like the sun and moon. They have their faults, and everyone sees them. They change, and everyone looks up to them. And so I'm wondering, how are we going to change our faults, the faults that are embedded in the earth, the faults that are within each of us individually, and in each of us as a community? When the moon is not full, the stars shine more brightly. And this is sort of in contrast to the full moon. And there's two more beautiful quotes for today. The quote, the moon is at her full and riding high, floods the calm fields with light. The airs that hover in the summer sky are all asleep tonight. This is a quote from the American writer William Cullen Bryant. And lastly, everyone has heard this before, shoot for the moon. Even if you miss, you'll land among the stars, quote by Brian Littrell. And I think that is what the folks over in Japan are doing. They're doing everything in their capacity to do whatever they can before they have to back away or give up or say there's no more strength or possibility in salvaging the disaster. So I'm hearing some good news from time to time, and let's continue our prayers. I'm going to check in on our chat line. We have a few people there today, and it's nice to see you. Welcome to the Literary Scribes and the others if you want to introduce yourselves. I'd also like to thank our sponsor, Roger Van Zandvoort, for believing in homeopathy, believing in homeopathy world community, that this radio show is being brought to you by HWC. You can get on to Roger's page, Complete Dynamics, and check out his program for studying and learning homeopathy. Also, don't forget, you can click listen, friend, favorite, or comment onto the Blog Talk Radio. And I know there's a lot of housekeeping to do at the beginning of the show, but we're going to get into the depth of this, a lot of news today. One of the things that I wanted to mention is there is the 2011 National Center for Homeopathy Conference coming up in the first week of April. April 8th, 9th, and 10th, and it's going to be a massive, all these people are going to come together in this conference in Virginia. Take a look at the NCH website. It's www.homeopathic.org. There's going to be a huge lineup of fantastic speakers, panels, and discussions, and also even for the newbie into homeopathy intro classes. And we're going to go ahead and move right in, along into our study here with the current events. The State Department, the United States government, is making available potassium iodide. You're going to see the letters KI posted just about everywhere, and everyone's going to start looking on their periodic table of elements to understand more and more about the elements and chemistry today. Potassium iodine as a precautionary measure for its personnel and the dependents residing within many of the areas around Aichi Prefecture, the Nagoya, and if I'm not pronouncing the words correctly, please pardon me, in Tokyo, the Tokyo Capital Region, Yokohama, and the prefectures of Akita, Amori, Chiba, Fukushima, Kanma, Ibaraki, Iwate, Miyagi, Nagano, Niigata, and I think there's about a dozen more, which means that the area, they're starting to actually take action and prepare the people for the possible radiation sickness. The news from Japan, it appears that there was a moderate progress in stabilizing some of the nuclear reactors at the stricken Fukushima Daiichi power plant on Sunday, but at the same time, it disclosed new signs of radioactive contamination in agriculture, produce, and livestock. So you're going to be hearing a lot about what happens when we have nuclear fallout from the steam that's being emitted, the fires that are burning into the atmosphere, what happens when there is this settling of what goes into the atmosphere onto the ground, into the waterways, onto the food and the plants with which the animals are eating. So they're checking all the shipments of milk from Fukushima Prefecture and the shipments of especially spinach. So there's this they're actually checking the spinach for the levels of radioactivity and finding new cases of above normal levels for both of those products that people are eating. So they're going to take care and start probably examining more of the plants, including chrysanthemum greens from Chiba Prefecture in south of Ibaraki. And chrysanthemum is a popular food, and I know that it's a delicious tea, so we're going to find out more about probably the types of foods that are eaten in that part of the world. The emergency efforts to mitigate damage at Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power station brought some notes of relief in the face of these dire conditions and all of the notes that we're hearing about crisis and panic. They have restored the water pumps to two of the, maybe even four, I think I heard on the radio today, four of the damaged reactors, and they still have a few more to take care of. We'll see what happens. The Tokyo Electric Power Company is what is running the plant, and that's what they want to do, is keep cooling it down so it doesn't continue. They don't have to continue to release the steam and the heat into the atmosphere. And we're going to continue to listen to the radio and hear what's going on specifically about this. And my question is, and I really have no answer, is what happens to the water that is being used to cool the reactor plant here? And does that go up into steam in the atmosphere, or what happens to it? Does it go into the ocean again when they spray? They're also taking very good care of the really the people who I consider giving their lives to repairing the fuel rods and getting into the area that is highly contaminated with radiation. The reactors placed in the cold shutdown were already shut down before the earthquake and the tsunami, which was struck on March 11th. So we're going to go ahead and continue on after listening to this, all about what we're going to do regarding the kind of radiation sickness that we can have. On Homeopathy World Community, there are numerous people who are doctors and healthcare advocates who are posting information regarding radiation, about the elements, and what to do to stay safe. So we have Heidi Stevenson, who I don't know whether she's calling in today. Nobody's calling in. I'm just going to give you the information that she has provided for us regarding natural products and foods that help to protect against radiation. And there is a lot of information out there. You're going to see it floating out there on the internet. And please do be careful about what you are taking as solid information. Some of these people will probably try and scam you and sell some sorts of products, but you need to be very careful. You could check with your healthcare practitioner, your physician, to know what is correct. Non-homeopathic medicines that are used to treat radiation poisoning are available. And what to do to prevent it, to prevent the radiation sickness. Heidi has done a lot of research in this area to find out what the truth is and to discover the things that we need to know. There are some highly effective treatments, but most of them that are promoted are beneficial, either have little or no documentation to support their claims. So again, be cautious in what you're doing. So here we are. She has on her website a whole page about it, and I'm going to give you this information. Modern medicine typically doesn't offer very much to protect against or prevent the effects of radiation poisoning. The best that they have is high doses of iodine, which helps to protect the thyroid gland specifically. And worst, we know antibiotics are weakening the immune system. That is typically used when there is sickness and there are already advanced stages of poisoning, and then the person ends up to be on antibiotics. In contrast, there are several natural treatments to both limit the radiation damage and remove the toxins, and these have been well documented and shown to be effective. The time to treat radiation poisoning is before it has done any damage, and this is part of the sad news I feel with Japan, that they should have gotten the potassium iodine out there to the people really immediately and not had a delay. I know it's important to keep people calm, but I think safe is better than sorry. Two approaches that can and should be taken is, the first is to try to prevent radiation poisoning from getting into the body in the first place, and the second thing is to try to eliminate it once it has entered. And so that's probably where the people are going to be dealing with it, in the areas surrounding the earthquake, tsunami, and the nuclear steam that's coming out. The very first thing is to wash the skin. We tend to have an image of radiation as something that pierces the skin, as if nothing can interfere with its entry into the body. And Heidi says this isn't always true. In fact, the worst kind of radiation, alpha radiation, is completely unable to pierce the skin. And I actually have put a huge blog on Hub Pages regarding radiation, detecting radiation, what tools are used to detect it, and the different types of radiation. And I think Dr. Rajneesh has also posted here another article regarding the types of radiation. Our skin is our first line of defense against radiation. As it does it, our skin protects us from lots of things out there. Therefore, the first indication that there might be radioactive in your area is you should take off whatever clothing that you're wearing and dispose of it. Then wash yourself well using soapy water. That's the first line of defense. Clean yourself up. And the second thing is to protect the thyroid. And I'm going to check on the chat if there's any questions coming in. I see Dr. Bob is here. And if he is calling in, he'll let me know if he feels there needs to be something to be said. And I'm waving to all the guests that we have today. So we're going to go back to the process here of protecting the thyroid. You're probably aware of modern medicine's and the government's advice to get iodine, generally in the form of potassium iodide, which is KI, to take shortly before the exposure to radiation. That is helpful for the thyroid, but it doesn't do anything else for the rest of the body. However, we should not take the thyroid's health lightly. Damage to it means that the body's entire energy-generating system is harmed, which will rapidly lead to severe ill health, exhaustion, and death. And everyone has the thyroid in their mind when they think of hyper- and hypothyroidism and the ill effects that happen as symptoms that they have: severe fatigue and difficulty metabolizing nutrients, and many other, loss of hair, many other things that can happen when the thyroid gland is damaged. So the thyroid cannot tell the difference between radioactive and non-radioactive iodine. Therefore, if the thyroid is effectively filled with the non-radioactive iodine, then the radioactive variety cannot be absorbed by it. It's simply excreted and does little or no harm. It sounds simple. Therefore, iodine supplementation is a valuable method for limiting the effects of radioactive iodine. Of course, you may also have noted that there's been a run on it in the United States, which is really across the ocean, and even in the UK, it isn't legally available to the general public. This is, Heidi has a little political dig in here because, you know, we should be able to have these things available to us. Just because it's an alternative approach to healing doesn't mean that we shouldn't have health freedom to choose these sorts of important minerals and have them for safety. So she says in the UK it's not even legal. Here it is. As a matter of fact, I live near a nuclear power plant, and because of that, they provide to the residents in the neighborhood, they provide tablets just to keep in your home as a regular piece of security, the potassium iodine. And so I just have it just as for 30-some-odd years without taking it, just in the cabinet. Anyway, there are many ways to obtain the needed iodine besides getting these tablets. Of course, it's probably the best thing for you to have them, but you can follow the government's advice by eating. Oh, she's gives us another little zinger here, the agribusiness foodstuff fortified with iodine, and we know that there are salts that are fortified with iodine, not natural like the Himalayan salts. She also says it's found in condensed milk, commercial mayonnaise, and a few other food products. So therefore, you could be getting your iodine through some of your processed foods. Perhaps someone has tested these so-called foods to see if the fortified iodine is actually taken up by the thyroid. But I've yet to see any supporting documentation. So what she's kind of implying is that often we have lots of fortified foods that we consider foods, and we don't even know whether the body utilizes them, is able to absorb them, and we don't know if that has actually been tested. It should also be pointed out that milk is fortified with vitamin D and does not provide much vitamin D to the body. Very interesting, Heidi. Thanks for that one. Unless an exceptionally large dose of radiation is expected, people over the age of 40 probably shouldn't dose themselves with potassium iodide. They are significantly more likely to have adverse reactions to high doses and are better served by taking a natural source of iodine. The heartening news is that people over 40 are much less likely to get thyroid cancer, so their risk isn't as great. That is good news. And so in effect, what Heidi is telling us is, how do we measure the amount of iodine and in our system? You probably have to go and be tested to know how effective these supplements are, how your foods are doing and being absorbed in your body. Natural sources of iodine is going to be next. Okay, we've got some news in the chat here. Dr. Bob is telling us that the groundwater around the nuclear stations have been contaminated, so they cannot drink the tap water. And as far as I know, after the tsunami, they didn't even have any food or water, and everyone has been locked up in their homes. They've been told to stay in their homes. I don't know how they're getting food if they're not allowed to get out, and if the region is all contaminated, how they move about or how any food is available to them. That there is also radioactive dust that is being released from the steam and will get deep into the lung tissue and result in cancer years down the road. So these are the long-term effects that we can possibly see in the future. I think it's important right now to take care of the immediate needs of the people and get them out of harm's way. I think personally, my personal opinion is to just clear the population out of that region, if that is at all possible. The most obvious sources or iodine source in nature happens to be seaweed, especially that of the laminaria family. The term kelp generally refers to any member of that family. You can purchase kelp and other seaweeds from Asian and Chinese groceries and from many supermarkets. It will be wise to start including it as a large quantities in your diet, and to do that now so that you can bulk up your thyroid gland with the good iodine. And isn't it interesting that the area where people typically eat seaweed in these Asian countries, Chinese markets around Japan, their healing food is right there in their region where there's these nuclear plants. I find the proximity of that, it's not just a coincidence, but now my concern is that the seaweed will be contaminated from the nuclear waste there, the effects of the steam and the fallout. Another good source of iodine is sea fish, especially Scotland's favorite haddock, which is the single most iodine-rich food known. Heidi is full of fun facts, and that is really good to know. I wonder what the population of haddock is in the oceans, and hopefully they have not also been fished out. However, a more direct and quick method of supplementing iodine in quantities sufficient to satiate the thyroid and thus preventing radioactive iodine from obtaining a purchase is kelp supplements, which are available in most health food stores and health shops. So it seems like in the European Union and the United States, you can find these kelp supplements even if you can't find the potassium iodine. The question is how much iodine? The generally recommended level of iodine is 125 micrograms per day. That is nowhere near adequate for the normal good health, and certainly isn't good enough to protect your thyroid from radiation. So what Heidi is telling us here is we usually get a recommended level from the government of different chemicals, elements, minerals, vitamins, and they may not be the higher dose. We know a lot of people take very high megadoses of vitamin C and other vitamins, and so they're saying that she's saying 125 micrograms a day is at the lower level. Okay, she also goes on to tell us that the World Health Organization, WHO, recommends potassium iodide supplementation at the rate of 130 milligrams per day to prevent the thyroid's uptake of radioactive iodine. About one-third of potassium iodide is iodine. Therefore, an appropriate single-day iodine dosage to prevent is about 43 milligrams. It's a large amount, and it leaves the choice of eating seaweed is not going to fulfill the requirement. Therefore, the only realistic source of iodine to protect yourself against radiation is to use the supplement, the kelp, in pills and tablet form, which, as was said, can be found at your health food store. Do read your labels to determine how much will be needed to add up to 43 milligrams. Keep in mind that supplementation at this high a level should be done only in an emergency situation, only where you have an imminent radiation emergency, because it can be an overdose to you, I imagine, if you're taking it for too long. So only take it for the short amount of time and as long as needed for a day before, just when you know, a day before the radiation arrives, and it may help maybe a day after. I don't really know the answer. Maybe somebody has the answer out there for how long the iodine remains in the thyroid before it dissipates, before it is released and you have to take it again? That would be a really good question, really good information if somebody has that out there. Okay. And now we're up to the information about what happens after exposure. For those folks who have already been exposed to radiation, there is these forms of chelation and detoxification. Dr. Manfred Mueller has spoken about that in the past in a recent show on Blog Talk Radio. He is going to be on again this coming Thursday. And please do come back for that. It's going to be a fantastic show about his reverse chronological tautopathy and how to remove disease and sickness back historically if you've taken drugs or had some sort of a toxic impact. After radiation exposure, you do not have to sit back and just wait to be sick, worrying about how severe the damage might be. This is where natural medicine is light years ahead of allopathy. We don't just wait for symptoms. Actually, we know that we can take action. Instead of learning from prior experience, we can use the prior experience and knowledge that we have. And here are some methods for detoxing. One point should be made clear. The term chelation is usually used in reference to removing toxic heavy metals. And that is not the case in terms of nuclear radioactivity. While it's certainly true that the radiating materials are heavy metals, the radiation itself never includes the whole atom. It consists of atomic particles and waves. In this context, chelation refers to elimination of excess radioactivity in the body. So, and I also want to make a mention that Manfred Mueller in the past has said to always have a professional guide you through the chelation process. It is not something that you take lightly. It is, some people get sick if they just eat too much cilantro. I happen to like it and have no problem with it, but some people, it can cause a reaction and they might not feel so well. It might be called the healing crisis, or it might really not be good for them. So, first off, we're going to be talking about spirulina and chlorella, which are, I want to welcome, we've got some new listeners today in the chat line. Thanks for waving and chatting hello to me. That is Lisa. Okay, so we're going to talk about spirulina and chlorella. Spirulina and chlorella are useful for both reducing radiation levels and for improving general health. They are both types of algae, highly rich in nutrients. And we were just talking, just a few minutes, about kelp, which is in the family of in the sea plant foods, which are so good for us. And just to imagine that these types of plant life can protect us and help us with our health. And I'm going to just check on the Blog Talk Radio, the chat, and to the HWC chat if there's any comments, if you have any. Spirulina has been studied in Russia, China, and Belarus. The studies show different but related effects of spirulina. They include reduction of radioactivity in the urine by 50% in children after just 20 days, and reduction of immunoglobulin E in children living in radioactive areas, usually cited as near Chernobyl, but she couldn't actually document that, meaning that they have tried, after the Chernobyl incident, to find ways to help these people heal. And obviously, chelation was one of them. Maybe Russia is way far ahead of the rest of the world in dealing with nuclear fallout and radiation sickness. They claim that the blood of all children who received 5 grams of spirulina per day for 6 weeks was normalized, while that of children who did not receive the spirulina was unchanged. Therefore, they had a control group. Spirulina is a blue-green algae, and some people call it alga, It thrives in eutrophic conditions, extremely nutrient-dense bodies of water, so it is exceptionally high in many nutrients. Appropriate dosage has not yet been established. The experience of researchers seems to indicate that 5 milligrams per day is safe. However, there have been some indications that its ability to eliminate toxins may put stress on the liver. Therefore, it's important to take a liver detox, such as milk thistle. So you can understand why Manfred gives us cautionary advice about doing this on your own. I imagine, and I just went to the store and picked up some green drink, and I'm sure it's not that high in spirulina, but it does contain some of that chlorella and spirulina and good greens to help clean out. But it does then, if it cleans out the rest of the cellular structure and the tissues in the body, it's the liver is going to have to be the one to clean it up. And that's why it's going to put stress on that liver. Okay, and the next one is, and Lisa tells us plankton is good. Yes, thank you very much for that. And the next one is chlorella. Chlorella is often listed along with spirulina as a radiation chelator or equivalent. While it most assuredly is a superbly nutrient-dense food and is known to ease the effects of chemotherapy, it seems that it's often confused with spirulina. So she's telling us they're two different organisms. It is noted for its ability to counter the effects of ultraviolet radiation, the type that causes sunburns, and that is certainly beneficial. However, claims that it's been shown to counter the effects of nuclear-type radiation seem to be based on confusing the studies of spirulina, which we had just mentioned above, with chlorella. By all means, take chlorella to improve your health, including after radiation exposure. It is a good general detoxer and noted for its ability to pull pesticides and heavy metals from the body. However, you would be wise to ignore anyone trying to sell it to you as a protector against nuclear radiation. It may there be, but there is no evidence to the effect that it actually does that. I do believe I've heard that chlorella is also good for your breath. And as a green, it's probably really good for the rest of your body too. If you're looking for a superb nutrient that can help support your body as it battles radiation poisoning, it seems chlorella is the one that has been shown to actually support the people going through this type of radiation treatment for cancer. So there you have that. And the last one here is kombucha tea. It's a very popular drink today. You can find it in all of your health food stores. Kombucha tea is made by fermenting sweet black tea with a pancake-like culture of yeast and bacteria, which is often called a mushroom, though it's obviously a misnomer. And we can also think back about what happened with the Gulf of Mexico and the oil spill, how bacteria are used to clean that up. Bacteria are our friends, and we have to think of them that way. And when they are in a good balance and used for cleaning up spills or for making a fermentation, which is really, really a good food. All of the fermented foods are very, very good for us. It's an ancient herbal treatment, this kombucha tea, for a wide range of ailments, including cancer, arthritis, digestive disorders, heart disease, asthma, blood pressure when that drops, and also other diseases. It has more recently been documented for its ability to increase vitality, including to increase the T cell counts and even to regrow hair. That's a very interesting point, Heidi. It's believed to stimulate the immune system. I guess I'm going to have to go out and get some of that kombucha. Oh, we're asking about kombucha tea and how to spell it. I will put it out for you here in a moment. It's K-O-M-B-U-C-H A-K-A, and I'll put that on the chat for you. And take a look. It's actually very tasty. They not only have it in the store in the black tea flavor, they also put other kinds of fruity flavors in, and I think it tastes quite good. It's got a bubbly texture to it. And it looks like maybe some people are chatting on the HWC. Jana on Homeopathy World Community says that she has read that chlorella is the best, better than spirulina. She said that her friend who is in nuclear technology is willing to make a remedy from... Oh, so anyway, that's another kind of a bit of information. We're going to go ahead with the kombucha tea. In September in 2010, the Journal of Environmental Biology published protective effect of kombucha mushroom, that's initials KMT, on chromosomal aberrations induced by gamma radiation in human peripheral lymphocytes in vitro. That was documented that kombucha tea protects against the toxicity of gamma radiation by combating free radicals. And we know that everyone's taking antioxidants to combat these, gobble up these free radicals that we don't want in the body. The study was performed on human peripheral lymphocytes exposed to 5-GY gamma radiation. This is a very strong evidence documenting the ability of kombucha tea to detox gamma radiation, a type that is produced by both uranium and plutonium. These are things that we're really concerned about today, is the uranium and plutonium and the cesium. And Jana is also telling us that you can make your very own kombucha tea if you do have the mushroom. It's sort of, what is the kind of bread that you have a starter for, this kind of a bread, and you just keep feeding it and feeding it, and it keeps growing. It's, I don't remember right now. I used to do a lot of that kind of bread baking. But in the same way, when you're using these mushrooms or bacteria that grow and cause fermentation, you can actually make your own in your own kitchen and keep it going. So I do want to emphasize that the evidence is quite strong for the kombucha tea to detox the gamma radiation, and especially when we are concerned about uranium and plutonium. There is another type of... we've got some message from Dr. Bob. He's telling us that miso soup is recommended. And miso soup, we know, also comes from a fermented soy product. And all of, just like we're eating fermented soy, tempeh and other kinds of products, it's very, very good for us. We're going to move on to the bentonite clay. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it correctly, and the zeolite. Both bentonite clay and zeolite have strong and well-deserved reputations for detoxing. Both are well noted for their ability to detox heavy metals. Unfortunately, that fact seems to have been used to assume that it can detox radiation. Okay, so what we're hearing is you're going to hear people talking about connecting the dots, saying that to take care of your radiation sickness, your radiation poisoning, you can clear it out with this clay, which is not documented. It is only documented for removing heavy metals, as we just spoke about regarding the other products. Although radiation comes from heavy metals, the radiation itself is not a metal. It can either be either a subatomic particle or a wave, but it is not a complete atom like a metal. While it may be true that bentonite clay and zeolite can detox radiation from the body, we do not have anything at this time to support that claim. And finally, we're going to talk about something for our liver, and that is milk thistle. Milk thistle, in any situation in which the liver is asked to do extra heavy duty, like when a person comes down with hepatitis, we want to support the liver as much as possible and provide this, in this case, for the radiation poisoning, because we know that to clear the body and to do the detox, the liver is going to get the brunt of it. It's important that we know that and take care of our liver the best that we can. Radiation itself is particularly hard on the liver, and the extra stress placed on it by excessive free radicals makes it even more important. We do know that milk thistle, also called silymarin, is commonly available. It has a stimulative effect that can cause also mild adverse effects, including nausea, diarrhea, vomiting, headache, rash, and upset stomach. So do be careful. Go to your practitioner to be guided through the cleansing process. Just like anything, you know, you're going to get these healing crises when the body is trying to eliminate. Just as if a dog was sick and went out into the garden, into the lawn, and started eating grass to cleanse themselves, they're going to start barfing. You know, they're going to be sick and not feel well. And this is true for any kind of sickness where the body is trying to cleanse and get it out. It's not going to be an easy process. So even people who have taken nothing else to combat radiation poisoning might consider the milk thistle as part of their regular healthcare regime. It can be the difference between health and sickness, and radiation will definitely put a stress on your liver. Various other nutrients that you can use, and I want to thank Heidi again for being so thorough in her article. There's also Dr. Bob has given us a recommendation that the Huffington Post, an article written by William Spear, has a lot of information regarding the radiation emergency measures. So the information is out there, folks. You just can put it into the web server and surf around and you will get there. Just make sure that you get a reliable source who is giving you this information. Now we're going to talk about various nutrients and foods that can be helpful in preventing or limiting the effects of nuclear radiation. There are some truths to many of the suggestions, but we also have some problems with them. First, in the acute situations, we aren't looking for slow-acting remedies. You know, that means over the long haul, something that's going to take months and months to work and cleanse slowly. We need something that's going to be immediately effective for people getting this traumatic acute situation. Most of these methods tend to be slower that we're going to talk about next, and their symbiotic effect with other nutrients can have some confounding results, she says. I'm not exactly sure what those confounding results mean or are. Nonetheless, here is the list of items that you might actually have in your cupboard today. Pectin from any fruit, but most readily separated from apples. There are indications that pectin may reduce radioactivity in the body, but it does not appear to be definitive. We don't have actual data on that. And we know a lot of people tell you to, well, an apple a day keeps the doctor away, but we also know that fruit is full of juice and liquid and fiber, and that does help bulk up and move things along in your system. It's good to have a high fruit and vegetable diet, and not too much sugar. Calcium is believed to bind radioactivity, but whether it is effective as a radioactivity chelator is not clear. So all those folks who are concerned, we know radioactive impact on the body can affect the bones quite severely, and therefore there's a relationship between calcium and radioactivity. The next item on the list is vegetable oils. It should be considered that any vegetable oil purchased from the supermarket is hydrogenated, and it will have an overall negative effect on the body. I myself only use virgin olive oil, fresh first pressed, and some sesame seed oil. So you're going to want to look at some really pure oils. The next item is buckwheat and millet seeds. Now, who would have thought that your grains would be helpful? But they are. So take a look at buckwheat, groats, and millet seeds. The next one is chlorophyll-rich foods. And these are your vegetables, your greens, like broccoli, green cabbage, and alfalfa. And they have been documented to counter the effects of radiation, though it seems to be unknown whether it chelates the radiation or simply counters the ill effects. So I'm not sure whether she's telling us that you have to be eating them in, have them in your body before the radioactivity occurs, or you probably should be eating them all along anyway. My concern now is alfalfa. We now have GMO alfalfa, so try and look for organic products. The next one, I'm going to check this out, is brewer's yeast. It is noted for countering the effects of radiation. Though like chlorophyll-rich foods, it's not known where it counters the ill effects or chelates the radiation. So on all of these food products and supplements and some of these things we've been talking about, we don't know at what point it's going to be most effective, whether it's going to be most effective if you've already been eating it in your diet and your body has these products in them, or whether it's going to help to remove the radiation that gets absorbed into the body, or whether it's in the process of removing the already absorbed radiation. And here we have, like Dr. Bob says, miso soup. It may be that it's beneficial because of high levels of iodine, but miso is well documented to benefit circulation and also to remove blood clots. That's fascinating. Then we've got nettle tea, which we know is excellent for allergies, allergic reactions, stinging nettle. Many people have heard of it. And so we're saying that here we can use this as a tea. We've got burdock root called Arctium lapa, and this item is questionable. So you might hear about it, and we don't really know for sure, for it's known for its ability to eliminate radioactive isotopes from the body, which is not the salient issue when we're talking about radiation poisoning, radiation sickness, and toxicity. So that's kind of lower on the list is the burdock root. Foods that we know about for fighting and preventing cancer, such as dried beans, especially the lentils and the mung beans, the cruciferous vegetables we've already mentioned, broccoli and cabbage, and the vegetables that have high levels of beta carotene, which would include carrots, I presume, plus black and green tea. And I know that there are many research projects and studies that have shown that green tea and black tea are very, very good for people who have different types of cancers. So I've always thought of 3 cups of tea a day, at least. So then we've got vitamins and supplements. And I'm going to check on the time. I made an especially long show today to cover all of this information, and actually I've got a whole ton more of information to talk about. Vitamins and supplements, vitamin E, vitamin C, and calcium, they're saying, in large doses. And then there's the B complex. We have to be careful about how the quantity of the B complex. Overdosing vitamin D is similar to those for underdosing. It can be severe, so get care, get guidance, check with your healthcare practitioner and your physician about the actual amount of vitamin B that you want to have circulating in your system. And then we've got magnesium. A large percentage of people may be deficient in this important mineral. In fact, I was reading yesterday that magnesium is probably one of the most important elements that you're going to want to have in your system for these types of reasons. The diet in general, do you notice anything about the list of beneficial nutrients for radiation poisoning? They're the same things that you'll find on nearly all lists of particularly healthy foods. That should make the next point quite obvious. The very best way to deal with radiation poisoning is by being healthy in the first place. That means routinely eating healthy foods and avoiding the ones that are not good for you, things that are processed, all those white things, the sugar and the white flour and the cakes and all that stuff. You don't really need it. And we want to put in our body things that are wholesome and alive and good for us. And so we can get all the things that are needed from those whole foods. And my personal opinion is there is a spiritual energy within those foods when they are alive. As can be seen from all of the natural products that can be used to improve one's ability to prevent, detox, and overcome the effects of radiation, natural healing methods clearly offer far more than modern medicine's approach of trying to protect a single organ. To what we're talking about specifically in this case is the thyroid gland. When the body has lost its ability to care for itself, throwing highly toxic antibiotics at a weakened system. So she warns us about using antibiotics as the panacea for everything, for the whatever that word is, that for taking care of anything that's wrong with you. We really do need to take care of ourselves on all levels. And we're going to be talking about some other things today in the news. And actually, maybe I might save that for another show, because we've got a little bit of time, about 30 minutes left in the show. And I wanted to tell you about something that's going on in the news today. It's a mistake with metal in a study. It is not known if the metal is dangerous to our health, because relatively little research has been done on the long-term effects in the body. But this particular metal called tungsten can show up on mammograms, and they may make them difficult to read. It is especially troubling effect for women who have already had breast cancer and worry about recurrences. The particles resemble calcium deposits, which might make people think that you have a cancer, but you might not. It might just be this metal, tungsten. About 30 women specifically have been affected, according to the manufacturer of a new device that has caused the problem. I don't know how to accent, AXXENT, FlexiShield Mini. The women are in a quandary, at least one fearing that the tungsten could cause cancer and another illness. This woman is trying to decide whether she should go through a radical mastectomy. When women are in a state of fear, they need to be guided as to what is the best course of action and to know what is going on with their body. 27 of the cases occurred at the Hoag Memorial Hospital Presbyterian in Newport Beach, California. 11 of the women have had mammograms, and 11 showed tungsten. Two of the other women were treated in a study at Karmanos Crittenden Cancer Center in Rochester Hills, Michigan, and the hospital spokeswoman said that both patients were informed of the recall, because there was a recall of this particular form, Accent FlexiShield Mini, this particular device that was used. The FDA toxicologists have found no evidence that the tungsten was toxic or the patients were harmed, but in the long term, we don't know really what the effects will be. These women were exposed to the tungsten, were taking part in a study of a radiation technique. I'm highlighting that word, radiation technique, that some doctors predicted would be a big advance in the treatment of breast cancer. Unlike the usual 5 to 7 weeks of daily radiation sessions, the newer method delivers the entire course of treatment in one dose while the woman is still in the operating room after undergoing a lumpectomy for breast cancer. That is quite frightening. Oh. But in the study, a device that was temporarily placed in the woman's incisions during the radiation treatment was apparently flawed and riddled their breast with tungsten. The Accent FlexiShield Mini, a $100 disc made of tungsten and silicone was used to shield healthy tissue from the radiation. The first patient to take part in the study at Hoag said the events had shattered her faith in the vigilance of the drug agency, the hospital, and her surgeon, who she said enthusiastically talked her into participating, emphasizing how convenient it would be to finish radiation treatment before she even woke up from surgery. So that's the story. I think we're going to probably hear considerably more about it. This was a report on the New York Times today. The purpose of the study was not to test the new radiation treatment itself, but rather to determine whether imaging studies could correctly predict which women would be candidates for it. It never occurred to anyone that the equipment might be faulty. And so what the woman said is, I had this illusion, like most people do, that the FDA wouldn't allow this to happen. And she said she definitely felt like a laboratory rat. And that is, you know, I think we all feel that way a lot of times, and especially with what's going on in the healthcare today. I'll let you read the rest of it. There's quite a bit more to learn about that particular incident. They found tungsten when there was the biopsy, and okay, there's a lot more to read. And I wanted to mention that on another homeopathic website called Interhomeopathy, there is a story, a case done by Wendy Hewlin, homeopath to stars on Twitter, and she wrote in interhomeopathy.com a case of a person who was healed with the metal tungsten metallicum. It was a case with a person who had acne, poor concentration, congestion, coughing, yellow secretion, thick lumps in the cough and lasting for days, and probably many other emotional problems there. Let me see if I can read you a little bit more about it. The patient's mother said her daughter, when she came back from a visit to Mexico, wanted to sleep with the light on. She was very needy and asked why she was sent away. It was just 3 weeks. While the mother had a new baby and then started working full time, she couldn't take care of her too. So obviously she had sent her to her aunt to take care of her. And it's kind of a long story. You can read it online at Interhomeopathy, the tungsten metallicum case. One of the things about it is there's dreams that people have when they have tungsten, probably could use the remedy tungsten. Dream one, last year I saw a man cross red eyes with a fever and hallucinations. After the vaccines, I saw sharks coming through the window. Dream two, at the physical education, the ground was moving toward me, clouds moving in other directions. Then I saw a black woman in a ski mask. Then I saw something on TV, a TV movie in the story, a clown, and did bad stuff to children. Sounds like it's quite frightening to have to be needing the tungsten metallicum as a remedy. So it's sort of a trauma to the body. Going on, I wanted to give you a little bit of information, a little bit more information about tungsten today, and that is coming from the Complete Dynamics, Roger, Complete Dynamics computer program. And it says that for the generalities, the symptoms that are going to be needing the tungsten remedy are occurring mostly on the right side of the body, and there is also a lot of internal, external, upper body and lower body pain, and it affects the mucous membranes with darting, shooting, and lightning quick types of sensations in the body. Also feeling very bruised and sore with stitching types of pain. The pain could be worse at night. And there's also the sensation of formication, which is like crawling and itching on the body. And those are a few of the things that you could learn. But obviously, there's a great deal of pain regarding tungsten and rigidity and stiffness and swelling in the body. Plus the eruptions, because this was used particularly in the case for acne. And I want to thank Wendy for that. Homeopath 2 stars on Twitter. Tungsten is known as a chemical element with the chemical symbol W and the atomic number 74. It is a steel gray metal. Under standard conditions, when uncombined, tungsten is found naturally on the earth only in chemical compounds. It was identified as a new element in 1781 and first isolated as a metal in 1783. Its important ores include wolframite and scheelite. The free element is remarkable for its robustness, especially the fact that it has the highest melting point of all the non-alloyed metals and the second highest of all the elements after carbon. Also remarkable is its high density of 19.3 times that of water, comparable to that of uranium and gold, and much higher, about 1.7 times that of lead. Tungsten with minor amounts of impurities is often brittle and hard, making it difficult to work. However, very pure tungsten is more ductile and can be cut with a hacksaw. That comes from Wikipedia. Thank you very much. And lastly, we're going to talk for a few minutes about the Organon of Medicine, which is really why a lot of people come to listen to the show, to learn about what Samuel Hahnemann has to teach us as our guide. The Organon of Medicine is the what I consider the first how-to book for medicine and healing. Dr. Hahnemann himself, I'm going to give you a quote, that Iman Navab of the Facebook HWC has written for us, quote, "How is it possible that a traditional, true, practical medicine, if there be such a thing, could ever suffer damage from the private opinion of a single man like myself? What would it have to fear from a little book of not many pages like the Organon?" So he puts that out there. And, you know, that was over 200 years ago he was asking that question. And we might ask that question again in our healthcare environment around the world. However, I do want to make a note that wonderfully, AJ has posted onto Homeopathy World Community a wonderful news article coming out of India that despite attacks in the Western market regarding homeopathy, the growth and prediction of homeopathy in India is quite high. In New Delhi, report says Western countries like Britain may persist with their scathing attacks on homeopathy, calling it unscientific, and for which dozens of systematic reviews have failed to produce convincing evidence of effectiveness. We all know this is not true. Despite the carping critics, homeopathy, which is around 250 years old, continues to be tremendously popular. A study has just said that the Indian homeopathy treatment market is likely to grow 30% annually and pegged at ₹4,600 crore in the next few years. Globally, the homeopathy market is estimated at ₹26,300 crore, with France being the largest contributor. Last year, the size of domestic homeopathy market was around 2,758 crore, according to a study by the Associated Chambers of Commerce and the Industry of India. Union Health Ministry officials said that over 100 million Indians depend solely on homeopathy. 100 million. And that's just one country. This figure is likely to exceed 16 crore in the next 3 years. India has over 5 lakh registered homeopaths and around 20,000 more are being added every year. Can you imagine if we had 20,000 new homeopaths in all countries around the world? We would be able to care for quite a few people. There are 185 homeopathic colleges, which offer 33 PG courses. Besides, there are 11,000 homeopathic hospital beds, and I know many of the physicians, homeopathic physicians on Homeopathy World Community, are making it their goal to build new hospitals. So those numbers are quite amazing. Well, going on to our reading, Aphorism 180, we have been, over the course of the last month, been intermingling our study of the Organon with the current events and the news, which is really vital to understanding homeopathy. And thus the reading of the aphorisms has been slow going. The last dozen or so have been about aggravations from taking impartial semillimums. That means that not completely matching the patient's disease symptoms or not having the right remedy in the toolkit, in your list of homeopathic remedies. And we must remember that this is written 200 years ago by Dr. Samuel Hahnemann, who had many fewer remedies at his disposal, and he lamented about that fact. And yet, because he had a fewer number, he was probably so well versed in those and knew them like the back of his hand that he could utilize them much more efficiently. Still, he said that it was rare not to be able to find and deal with disease with the remedies that they had on hand and with what they knew about these, about both the medicinal properties of their drugs and about the knowledge of the diseases that people were experiencing at the time. He also spoke about not having enough symptoms. This is another earlier aphorism about what happens when the patient comes in and doesn't provide very many symptoms to make a proper selection of the matching remedy. He said that too was a rare occurrence and could be remedied over the course of time by observing the patient's response to the remedies that were given with the information at hand. And so now we're going to read aphorism number 180 today. Quote Hahnemann, "In this case, the medicine, which has been chosen as well as was possible, but which, for the reasons stated above stated, is only imperfectly homeopathic." And what he's saying, it's imperfectly homeopathic because it's not a right-on bullseye target covering all of the information that we need to make a good selection. And I want to thank Lisa for commenting on the chat and supporting me and cheering me on. It's always great to have a cheerleader to know that we're just not talking into the thin air, but people are listening. So again, I'm going to repeat the aphorism. Organon aphorism number 180 states, "In this case, the medicine, which has been chosen as well as was possible, but which, for the reason above stated, is only imperfectly homeopathic, will, in its action upon the disease that is only partially analogous to it," and so you can just think about two triangles being analogous to each other, and if they are equal sides, equal angles, then they're going to match. "Just as in the case mentioned above," and he refers us to aphorism number 162, I'll read that in a moment, "where the limited number of homeopathic remedies renders the selection imperfect." So Hahnemann must have really been wanting perfection in his work, perfection to completely annihilate disease, to cure, as it is termed, produce accessory symptoms, and several phenomena from its own array of symptoms are mixed up with the patient's state of health. So what he's saying is, when you don't have a perfect right-on remedy, you're going to be producing some accessory symptoms from the new drug that's given. And so you're going to see a change in the patient's state of health, and you might mix up here the symptoms of the patient, the natural disease, and the artificial disease that is coming from the drug. And in capital letters, he says, "which are, however, at the same time, symptoms of the disease itself, although they may have been hitherto never or very rarely perceived." This is quite interesting, quite perceptive of Samuel Hahnemann. The doctor is saying that perhaps some of the remedy, some of the symptoms that are going to be coming out from giving this particular drug, medicine, homeopathic remedy, are actually going to be part of the disease, but we just didn't realize it because the patient did not tell it to us, did not elicit it, or it was so minor and so imperceptible that they didn't realize it was part of the disease that is before them at the time and that they're trying to cure. Some symptoms, quotes Hahnemann, which the patient had never previously experienced appear, or others he had only felt indistinctly, become more pronounced. So thus, sometimes the right drug, the right homeopathic remedy, which you might think is producing a new symptom, is actually part of the case. It is part of the person's totality, holistically looking at their illness, their disease, and the patient just may not have been consciously aware of it, or it may have been a very minor part of their illness. And now we're going to go ahead and read aphorism number 162, which is referred to in the Organon aphorism number 180 today. Quote, "It sometimes happens, owing to the modern number of medicines, yet known with respect to their true, pure action, that but a portion of the symptoms of the disease under treatment is to be met with in the list of symptoms of the most appropriate medicine. Consequently, this imperfect medicinal morbific agent must be employed for lack of a more perfect one." Thus, again, repeating, he is saying, when you don't have enough information and you must take action, he has to give a remedy based on the information at hand. What does he know? What observations has he made of the individual before them? And we know from the beginning of the show in May of 2010, we talked about being a good observer. What is the odor in the room? What is the complexion of the face? What is the countenance on the face? How does the person carry themselves? How do they speak? All of the things that you can reap the information without the person even opening their mouth. And then specifically getting the information from the patient. And we can also gather information from those who are around the patient as well. But he's saying when you don't have all the information and it is not perfectly clear, you are perhaps going to have this moderate number of medicines with no... Okay, he's also saying here that sometimes you don't have a remedy that's going to be a perfect match because the remedy doesn't cover all the symptoms. And thus, you're going to perhaps move the patient a little bit closer, shift them a little bit with the remedy that is given. Okay? And that is aphorism number 180 and 162 today. We're going to go ahead and move on to aphorism number 181. "Let it not be objected that the accessory phenomena and new symptoms of this disease that now appear should be laid to the account of the medicament just employed. They owe their origin to it," in 111, "certainly, but they are always only symptoms of such a nature as this disease was itself capable of producing in this organism." So, which means he's telling us that we're only capable of producing this, these types of symptoms in an organism that is susceptible to having them come out, "and which were summoned forth and induced to make their appearance by the medicine given, owing to its power to cause similar symptoms. In a word, we have to regard the whole collection of symptoms now perceptible as belonging to the disease itself, as the actual existing condition, and to direct our further treatment accordingly." And there is a reference to aphorism number 181. when they were not caused by an important error in regimen, a violent emotion, or a tumultuous revolution in the organism, such as the occurrence or cessation of menses, conception, childbirth, and so forth. So we know how important these types of events are in a person's life. And you can add there any kind of tumultuous revolution, and we have a lot of that happening in our world today, and things that might cause even a shock to the system could cause the cessation of menstruation. And there's all these other things that are happening in our lives that could be impacting and causing a change. So let's read that one more time. We will read one more time on aphorism number 181 all the way through. Let it not be objected that the accessory phenomena and new symptoms of this disease, so he said in aphorism number 180 that you might have new things appearing and it might mix, you might mix up the natural disease with the artificial disease, which comes from the medicinal drug, which causes artificial symptoms. So let us not be objected that the accessory phenomena and new symptoms of this disease that now appear should be laid to the account of the medicament just employed. So he's saying it may not be the result of the medicine. They owe their origin to it, certainly. So it might have initiated the action in the body to come out with these new symptoms, yes. But there are always only symptoms of such a nature that, capital letters, this disease was itself capable of producing in this organism, and which was summoned forth and induced to make their appearance by the medicine given. So by giving a partial semilimum, something that's not exactly on target, it shifted the organism and produced new symptoms. But he's saying the only reason that those new symptoms could actually be elicited is because of the nature of the disease, the nature of the organism, and the drug. So you have all of those dynamisms in action. And so if you were to give a drug that wasn't even partially a semilimum, partially the same or analogous to the disease, nothing would have happened. Nothing would have changed. So when there is a change, this is something that we have to be aware of, owing to the to its power to cause similar symptoms. He says, he follows up, in a word, we have to regard the whole collection of symptoms now perceptible as belonging to the disease itself. So he's saying it's not just the reason you're seeing these symptoms elicited is not just the medicine given. It's actually the disease itself that is coming out more fully, blooming, you might say, by the dynamism between the homeopath and the patient and knowing what how to move in a good direction and to direct our further treatment accordingly. So this is what you need to know, case management, how to move forward. Once you've made a shift, then you can reassess again what to do. And we're going to check our time. We have a little bit more time to go ahead with aphorism number 182. And you can see how a homeopath really has to be an artisan, really has to be in tune with the patient, very aware, listening, careful, knowing their remedies, knowing the medicines and the actions that it can have. Aphorism number 182, quote, thus, the imperfect selection of the medicament, which was in this case almost inevitable, owing to the too limited number of symptoms present. And this refers back to the previous aphorism, when the patient just does not display enough. A person can't come in and say, I have a headache, and that's not going to be enough to distinguish the proper remedy. It serves to complete the display of the symptoms of the disease, and in this way facilitates the discovery of a second, more accurately suitable homeopathic medicine. Again, aphorism number 182 states, Thus, the imperfect selection of the medicament, which was in the case almost inevitable owing to the too limited number of the symptoms present, serves to complete the display of the symptoms of the disease, and in this way facilitates the discovery of a second, more accurately suitable homeopathic medicine. And when Hahnemann states homeopathic, it is a dynamism. It is it's a verb. It's an action. It is an analogous between the drug and the effects that a drug can make, the actions of the drug, and the diseased organism. And so we have here a shift in a knowledge from the homeopath as to what to do next, when at first there was not enough information, and then new information is being given. And we have a few minutes left. I think I'm going to stop here regarding the study of the Organon. I want to thank everyone. It's been an extremely long, long show today. I did that simply because I felt that there was so much information going on in the news, affecting our lives, affecting all the countries, bringing us together. I want to remind everyone about the shows that we have on Monday. It is with me, Studying the Organon, Current Events. Send me some notes if you think there's something that's important. I want to tell everybody to get out there. If it's springtime in your area, take a walk, get refreshed, get away from the computer. Look up at the sky. We still have a partial, it's going to be a day away from the full moon. Smile, share this information with other people. You can like the show, favorite the show, be a friend of the show. You can get your name on your own Blog Talk Radio account so that we know who you are when you come in and I can greet you properly. Check out Roger's Complete Dynamics. We have a lot of good shows coming up. On Wednesday, we're going to be talking about the depopulation of the bees with Kaviraj. He's back in London and will be live on the show. On Thursday, we have a double hitter. We've got an 11 o'clock with Manfred about reverse chronological tautopathy, a special protocol he's using to help people who have been had too much toxicity in their system. And then we're going to have the legalities of vaccinations and your rights with Alan Phillips at noon. So all three of us will be on together. And then again, on Sunday night, we're going to have a new meditation. And those just come to me intuitively, knowing what to say and what people are in need of healing for Sunday night. So I'm going to close the show, and I want to thank you so much for listening. Take care.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with host Debbie Brock on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to take your Organon off the shelf and read it.